In today's episode of Backpacker Radio, we chat with trail legend Heather Anderson, aka Anish. She swung by Casa Davis during the CDT portion of her calendar triple, which is to hike the AT, PCT, and CDT in a single calendar year. Insane. Really interesting and inspiring conversation with her. We get into some Trek propaganda featuring a new Uber Light sleeping pad from Thermarest. Chance and I get into the second edition of Patent Pending, and we get an update from friend of the show, Stephen Twinkle Shattuck. But before we get into the show, I want to give a shout out to our newest sponsor, Gossamer Gear. Taking less really frees you to do more and travel farther. Gossamer Gear packs, shelters, and trekking poles combine to make travel easier because they are so much lighter. No sacrifices are made in the design. Gossamer Gear packs carry comfortably, their trekking pole shelters protect in harsh weather scenarios, and their trekking poles are some of the lightest on the planet. Gossamer Gear is changing the perception of delicate, ultralight gear. Chance and I are actually both very familiar with Gossamer Gear's products. If you're a listener of the show, you already know that. I used the Gorilla, their 40-liter pack, on the PCT last year, which I loved. The Gorilla is a comfortable, thoughtfully designed, and affordable backpack. Chance used Gossamer Gear's The One Shelter, a very spacious one-person trekking pole tent that weighs only 21.6 ounces. This is actually the same tent that Jabba used on his PCT hike last year as well. And, lucky you, listeners of this podcast can score an exclusive deal on Gossamer Gear products until the end of the year. Use discount code TREK15 for 15% off your cart at gossamergear.com. And of course, we want to give a shout out to Sawyer Products. At the risk of sounding like a broken record, I want to talk about their new Micro Squeeze filter. The Micro Squeeze comes in at a full ounce lighter and about two-thirds the size of Sawyer's uber popular Squeeze filter. It utilizes the same hollow fiber membrane technology, which is 75% stronger than other fibers on the market. The filter also features an improved 1-liter pouch design, which is both quieter and lighter. It can be used with the standard 28mm bottles, yes, your smart water bottles, and the aforementioned 1-liter pouch. Best of all, this thing features a higher flow rate than similarly sized filters on the market, and it's darn close to the regular Squeeze's flow rate. The Micro Squeeze is good for up to 100,000 gallons of water, which, needless to say, you'll probably lose it before the warranty expires. If you want a closer look at this filter, head to the Trek's YouTube page where we put together a video comparing this with the standard Squeeze filter. And, of course, we will include it in the show notes. Okay, let's do the damn thing. To the show. Backpacker Radio, presented by The Trek. This is episode number 23. Chance, how excited are you to be a part of our Michael Jordan episode?
Oh, I get it now. I asked him before the show why it was Michael Jordan, and he was like, you'll see.
Yeah, this is very near and dear to my heart. Michael Jordan was my hero from, the ages of 3 when I came online to, how old am I today? Like 40-something?
75.
75 years old. So, yeah, it's episode number 23, the Michael Jordan episode. This is going to be our best one yet because he's the GOAT.
Well, not if you ask Blink-182, because they probably won't like it. No one likes you when you're 23.
Oh, right. That was... Isn't Blink-182 before your time?
I mean, I know the quote and you don't.
I mean, I know the quote. It just wasn't top of mind. Yeah. Anyways. So... I want to do something a little bit different. I want to start today with a fun fact, and this will be interesting to you because since Chance is now back on the AT bandwagon,
the possibly AT bandwagon.
Wait, put a percentage on it right now.
I don't know. You just lowered my percentage. 60.
Yeah, we can't get into that.
No secrets.
Yeah. So the fun fact is so. People who are familiar with the AT, or at least the Grayson Highlands, are very familiar with the quote-unquote wild ponies in that section of trail, which is amazing, by the way. You're pretty much guaranteed. I've been through the Grayson Highlands twice, and I've seen many a pony both times. I don't think I've talked to a thru-hiker that hasn't seen one. But the fun fact is that they're actually not wild. The more accurate description would be that they're feral, meaning that they actually descended from a domesticated breed, and they have since readapted to take on a more wild behavior.
Is that the difference between feral and wild?
Apparently.
Huh. I thought they were synonyms.
So, like, we know when you release a pig into the wild and it becomes feral, like, it starts to grow tusks and hair. Like, did you know this?
I just figured the pigs in the wild were like that because that's just how they were.
Yeah. Actually, I don't even know if based on this own definition. But, like, if you release, like a house pet, like a pig or, like, a farm animal into a pig into the wild, I think it's within days they start to grow tusks and grow long hair. Like, they,
really?
Yeah, they adapt to becoming wild creatures, or I should say feral creatures, very quickly.
I thought they just died kind of quickly because they were used to being fed.
Not in Texas. I know there's, like, huge cohorts of boar that just pretty much run the state nowadays. Yeah. So I guess the technical difference between feral and wild is wild are species that have always been wild, and feral are domesticated species that can also live in a more wild environment. Shout out to Kenny Howell, who we gave a shout out to him a few episodes ago for the Trail Magic Triple Crown of episode. He wrote a phenomenal article, this was years ago, titled 21 Fascinating AT Facts, and I just stole that from there. I thought it'd be a fun way to intro the show. I don't want to beat around the bush too long because we have a awesome, awesome guest on today's show. If you know anything about thru hiking, you know this name. She probably is the Michael Jordan of backpacking in terms of she was the first person to simultaneously hold the AT and PCT FKT. I think she's the only person to ever hold those records as a self-supported record. She owns the Arizona Trail FKT. She's just a bona fide badass. And she's in the midst of completing her calendar triple crown. By the time you hear this, I think she'll probably be done with it because she's very fast. So without any further ado, here she is, Heather Anderson, a.k.a. Anish. Buddy, house guest, and she probably feels uncomfortable with me saying this, but it's true. Hiking legend, Heather Anderson, aka Anish. A little bit about your bio. I'll do the brief because I feel like you probably won't give yourself full justice, but you're on your way to your triple crown.
Correct.
You're currently a double triple crowner.
Correct.
You own the self-supported FKTs on both, or you have set the self-supported FKTs on both the AT and PCT.
Correct.
You own the self-supported FKT on the Arizona Trail.
Correct.
What am I forgetting?
That I'm working on the calendar year triple crown.
We're about to go there. We're definitely about to go there. Okay. So, yeah, give us a little bit of background. Tell us more about your current, the 2018 journey.
So, March 1st, 2018, I left Springer Mountain, Georgia, on the Appalachian Trail. With the goal to hike the entire Appalachian Trail, the entire Pacific Crest Trail, and the entire Continental Divide Trail before the end of the day on December 31st, 2018, thus completing a calendar year triple crown.
And do you know how many people have done that? I remember you speculating before.
I'm aware of 4 men who've done it. There may be others, but that's who I'm aware of that has completed it. And there is one more out there currently who is doing the same thing this year. And
hard
he's
to answer questions when you're getting slapped in the face.
Right, with my dog. Yeah. There's a guy named Mike Papadotos, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He is probably just a few days away from finishing it this year as well. He started about a month before me. So there'll be probably 5 finishers before I finish.
Got you. Sierra, come here. All right. Sorry for the interruption.
It's okay.
Okay. So you're in the midst and said you're in order to do the, calendar triple, you had to finish before December 31st. You're obviously shaping up to finish way before that.
Yes.
Do you have like a rough expectation for when you're going to finish?
I guess it kind of depends on how nice the weather plays.
Yeah.
But I think I'll be done by Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been given advance on your book, which details your PCT FKT.
Correct.
It is. I'm about a third of the way through, and it's intense. Like, I went two pages in before I realized that this is obviously something I will never be able to do. But I'm curious how this challenge compares to setting like a 2,000 plus mile FKT.
Well, it takes a lot longer for one thing, which has its own set of challenges. My FKTs were obviously very quick, both 2 months or less on the long distance trials. And even my normal pace through hikes of the AT and PCT and CET were all like kind of around 3 to 4 months. So I'm almost...
Do you know what that equates to about miles per day for like a normal initial hike?
My non-records were probably like in the upper 20s miles per day average. Okay. Right around 30 maybe for my last CDT hike. But then this year, I've been out almost 8 months at this point. And so it's like definitely by far the longest I've ever been out in one continuous journey. It's also obviously the most miles I've ever hiked. Right now I'm probably over 7,000 miles in for the year. And, you know, it's also been because I started March 1st, I shorted myself a few months, and I also want to get done before Christmas. Like, I don't want to be out in December slogging through the snow. So I kind of forced myself to have to maintain like a 30 mile per day average. So there is a lot of similarity to an FKT where it's like you get up every morning, you have to put in your miles. Like, I haven't taken a lot of zeros except my travel back and forth because I've flip-flopped and the AT and the CDT a little bit. So it's definitely like that consistency and not having a lot of like leisure time, is very similar to the FKT, but, in other ways it's nothing like it because there's not the like intensity of like, you know, having to forego taking care of your body in certain ways, you know, sacrificing certain things is like, you know, I can sit in town and eat as much as I want, you know, and I do stay in, you know, hotels, and it's like, I get enough sleep. I mean, I'm sleeping 8 or 9 hours a night instead of like, you know, three. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely differences. But it is also very, a very intensive schedule.
Mm-hmm. I'm shocked by how little to non-existent your limp is. Like, you have no hike or hobble that I've been able to observe.
I have it. Like, when I got off the plane today, I did.
Okay.
You know, I was sitting for like four hours, yeah. You know, but, so I do stiffen up, but it's definitely at this point, I think my body's, adapted, I think, to this, and it kind of has caught on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when I stop walking for several days in a row. Because I might just be like unable to like, walk. Yeah. I'm always walking somewhere. But when I'm like limited to just walking back and forth to the fridge, you know, I might be more of a hobble then. Definitely. So when I finished the AT a couple of days ago.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Sat in the car to drive back to my friend's place after we finished the trail. She drove me back to her place, and I definitely noticed that evening I was hobbling around her house because like I'd only hiked like a half day and my body was taking full of advantage of the chance to heal. So like my legs and feet had super swollen up and I was like retaining all this water and I was like hobbling around. And then like the next day I was fine. Mm-hmm. But like, so my body, whenever I do give it like a reprieve, it's like massive repair has to take place.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Is your recovery plan different on this trek compared to, I guess, because you've had such a wide diversity of styles of hiking from FKT to a regular through hike, you're now doing 8,000 miles in a year. Is that about?
Yeah, it's like the full distance is 7,900, but CDT variations, it'll probably be more like 76 or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is your self-care plan different on this trek compared to other ones?
You know, I had to learn to have it be, because there's a lot of things that I just normally just like don't worry about when I'm out hiking. I'm like, whatever, I can go a few months without dealing with this thing. But, you know, when I'm out here, you know, I get lazy about toothbrushing when I'm hiking. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, all right, well, I brush my teeth, but now I'm going to eat some more food, you know, and then I'm going to go to bed.
Do you ever brush your teeth while hiking?
I do. It's one of the things I actually started doing to keep me on top of my dental care. Cause I was like, after both of my FKTs, I had cavities, just one after each one, just cause of like all the high sugar and the refined foods and just not being, you know, there were nights I literally was just too tired to brush my teeth,
yeah,
you know, which is ridiculous. But like, I was like just exhausted.
Every thru hiker is nodding their head right now.
Right. Yeah.
And they're doing half the miles.
Yeah. I mean, there are nights you fall asleep in your dinner. There's no like brushing your teeth, you know, if you fall asleep while eating dinner. Yeah. Anyway. So certain things like that where I'm like, well, I can't get lazy on that for like 8 months. Mm-hmm. Like you have to like make sure you're taking care of things. And like, I typically don't really like comb my hair while I'm hiking. I run my fingers through it, call it good. And I actually bought a comb this year because I started getting dreadlocks and I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think I want to go down that road.
Is it a Cuban fiber comb?
No, it's just a cheap plastic one, but it's pretty light. I mean, yeah. I think, yeah. Anyway, so there's just like little tiny things like that where I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm out here for like a really, really long time now. And I have to like pay attention to things and take care of things and stuff that maybe I wouldn't ordinarily let slide, you know, make sure I address.
So worth addressing, because this is different from other speed attempts that you did. I know it's not a speed attempt, but in a way it kind of is, is that you've got a support system who happens to be sitting right next to you, your fiance.
Yes, my fiance.
Yeah. How has that been compared to your other hikes? And how much of a difference has that made in terms of your ability to do something like this?
It's been really different, and it's also been really unexpected, and we've just winged it and it's been thrown together because it was never intended to be that way. We thought that at the beginning we'd hike up Springer Mountain together and I'd say okay, bye, and then I wouldn't see him until San Diego, and then we would hike the whole PCT together where he finished his Triple Crown, and then we get to Seattle and I'd hop on a train and say bye, and then I'd go hike the CDT. And little did I know that when we were hiking up Springer Mountain, he had a ring in his pocket and he proposed to me on the summit, which was very sweet. But then it just totally threw us both kind of into a headspin, like, well, now our relationship has changed. Now we don't want to be apart. Yeah. So then he kind of followed me for a little while on the AT, and I was like very reluctant to be supported. So I was still carrying my full pack, even though I was seeing him like every 10 miles.
Yeah.
And I was still hiking out and camping on my own. He's like sleeping in his truck at the trailheads. So it was kind of like a really ridiculous thing. And then he eventually left and I was on my own for a while, for like 10 days or so. And then there were a series of bad winter storms, just one after the other. And he was off in some part of North Carolina training and for a race. And he was like worried about me. So he came back. And I was very happy to have him back. And basically at that point we were like, okay, well, we're in this together now. And we formulated kind of a crewing system on the fly, which was still not perfect or anything. Like I would have done so many things differently if I'd known I was going to have a companion for a month on the AT. But then, you know, when we got up further north, then he went on his way. And then I did do part of the AT without him and then part of the CDT. And then we did the PCT together. And, it wasn't until we reached Washington that he was like, actually, I want to come crew you on the CDT. And I was like, are you sure you know what you're getting yourself into? Because you weren't very happy this spring, like, because it was such bad weather and it was really hard to like be in that role because I wasn't super happy about being crewed and you weren't super happy about crewing, but we both wanted to be together. And so there's just like all this like weirdness. And but yeah, so the CDT has been good because we were both able to commit to it from the beginning. To work on it together. And so we definitely were able to come up with a better system. But yeah, it's been different and it's been challenging. And we've both been in kind of a role that we're not used to. Mm-hmm. And so it's been room for personal growth as well as relational growth. And it's been overall, I think, a positive. But it definitely means my hike hasn't looked anything like I imagined it.
Yeah.
So I had to learn early on to be okay with like letting go of like the vision of what I expected this to be like. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's important though for all thru hikes, because I think expectation is where failure lies. And when you start on a thru hiker,
quote.
I mean, when you start on a thru hiker, a lot of different journeys in life, if you have certain expectations and you're not able to let go of those and like adjust, you're going to be disappointed in, you know, whatever. Like there's a lot of people that quit trails and I ask them why, and they're like, well, it wasn't what I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But, you know, in this case, I was really committed to finishing this hike, even though it wasn't looking like what I thought it would be. So that was been a valuable lesson for sure.
So you're how many months into this now?
Almost eight.
Almost eight. Is this a bigger physical challenge or a bigger mental challenge?
Mental for sure. Yeah. I vastly overestimated the physical toll and vastly underestimated the mental toll.
Interesting. Is that just purely due to the length, the 8 months aspect of it?
I think it's a combination of things. One was like the relationship dynamic change when we got engaged, because then all of a sudden I was like, oh, well, I kind of just want to go home and plan our wedding and like go forward in our life together. You know, I don't need to go play in the woods. So that was kind of like a mental challenge. And it's kind of like always in the back of my head is like, well, am I going to wish that we had not done this and gotten married and done other things instead, worked on building a house or whatever, you know, we do as a couple moving forward. But also, it's my third time hiking all three of these trails. And I've hiked them all, at least once in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, there's a little bit of a less of a sense of like excitement and wonder when I'm like, oh yeah, I was just here. Like I just hiked the Continental Divide Trail last year.
Yeah.
So I've hardly pulled out my map because I was like, oh yeah. And you know, the CET is very navigational intensive.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh yeah, I remember where I'm going here, you know.
Have you taken new routes just to keep it fresh?
Yeah. And so I started doing that. I started taking, you know, alternates and different routes and things like that to keep it interesting and to, you know, take advantage of my opportunity. Like I'm probably never going to hike these trails again. So it was like, okay, well, here's your time to explore the fuller corridor and see what else is here. And so I have been able to take advantage of that. And being on these trails at different seasons, that's also helped too. And then also just, the fatigue of just being out for so long and just being, you know, like I said, you have to be really dedicated to getting your miles in and stuff. And so there are days where it just feels like a job. It's like the alarm goes off at 5:30. I get up and I eat some food and I walk, you know, and then I go to bed and like, you know, do it again the next day. And so, there's definitely a little bit of that monotony that wears on you mentally.
Yeah. This might be an oddball question, but if you had to rank the journey that you're on now, the AT, FKT, PCT, FKT, and Arizona Trail FKT, what would you rank them in terms of difficulty?
It's really hard to compare the FKTs to this because they're so different in some ways. I think total overall difficulty might be the same, but the intensity is what varies. So each of those long distance FKTs, Arizona Trail was definitely the easiest. We can just put that one out there. That was at the bottom. That was very easy.
How many days?
19.
19 days. And it's what?
800 miles. Okay. Yeah. So.
That's crazy.
Yeah. the BCT and the AT, each of those in different ways, I really put myself 100% into that. It was, you know, extreme sleep deprivation. You know, I lost tons of weight. You know, I had to hike through pain and like
cavities.
Yeah, cavity. You know, the cavities came later. But yeah, like, you know, just all these, like, you know, but it's just basically like all the hardship of a through hike compacted into 2 months. Uh-huh. And so this is like all the hardship of three through hikes spread out over, you know, probably 8.5 months. So it's like sort of like the intensity skews it and makes it a little bit hard to compare, but I would say they're kind of all equally challenging, just in like a slightly different way and in a different intensity.
Okay. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask about some of the nitty gritty about your current hike. Cause I know we were talking the last time you were in town about the weather that you got on the AT. Talk a little bit about that.
So this was like the year of the never ending winter for me on the AT. So like I started out in Georgia and I think my first 2 days were, no, my first day was actually really cold and windy. The second and third days, I think, were sunny and warm, as you would expect spring in the South to be. And then basically shortly thereafter, it started raining and snowing and I was moving, I think, fast enough north to keep catching the last winter storm of every area. So it was just like every like few days.
You were surfing the storms.
Yeah. Every few days I was just getting slammed by a winter storm. And, you know, so it was just a struggle to stay positive and think, oh, spring is just around the corner. I was like, spring was right behind me, but I was just staying in winter. And I think for the first, what was I on the AT? I think 45 days or something this spring, or maybe 2 months, I guess. Whatever I was on the AT for this spring, I had, it was like 60 days, and I had 5 days of sun, or no precipitation at least. Mm-hmm. And it rained and snowed on me every single other day. Oof. And then when I went back to finish up, like I had the first like 5 days were like super sunny and beautiful, perfect fall. And then basically it started being winter storms with like 70 plus mile an hour winds and rain and snow and hail and ice. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, this trail, like, so it was just like, cause I did it at the AT as a flip flop. So like when I walked down, out of the Vermont mountains down to the Connecticut River on the border with, New Hampshire, it was this like perfect, like I finished on this like perfect spring evening in the east where it's like kind of that balmy, like warm evening air and like everybody's kind of out and it's this nice spring evening. And so like I walk back there just a couple days ago and it's snow flurrying and it's bitter cold and it's windy and I've got like all the layers on and there is no one out. And I was just like, wow, like in some ways I don't feel like any time has passed. Because you kind of lose all concept of the passage of time when you're on the trail. Right. But in other ways, like being at that same spot was such a stark contrast to like where I had come from and where I was now, and definitely kind of hit home how long I've been out here.
It's not an aspect of a flip-flop through hike that I had really considered, that you're seeing the same spot twice, likely in very different climates or different weather patterns. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So there's one thing I want to talk about that you mentioned in a previous answer is that you said you don't think you're going to be hiking any of the Triple Crown trails again.
Well, never say never. I said, I don't think.
Okay. Any particular reason for that? Is it just been there, done that?
You know, I think, you know, I used to think people that did these trails more than once were kind of crazy. I was like, don't you have anything else you want to do? Like, you know, and I do have so many other things I want to do. And I definitely feel like each of my Triple Crowns has had a very important epics in my life. You know, like my first one was just like when I was first finding hiking and athleticism, and then my second ones was like, you know, two-thirds of them were FKTs, and you know, just finding that inner growth and that inner part of me that I didn't know existed. And then doing this, you know, I've always wanted to do this. Like I've wanted to do this since I was like, I first heard about Flying Brian, the first person to do it. So it's been like 15 years. And so I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, okay, I want to kind of close out this like hiking career, if you will, on the Triple Crown Trails by fulfilling this like really old dream I've had. And I love all three trails and I want to probably hike parts of them again. But I definitely am looking forward to moving forward into to other experiences, especially with my life partner and doing different trails and traveling and just doing those things together, you know. So moving on, you know, I feel like this is like a closing chapter. And a lot of times this year, I've had moments where I feel like I'm saying farewell to these trails that have been so meaningful in my life and like ready to move on to the next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very poetic. We I do have to end it because we have to eat dinner.
Yes, we do have to eat.
You're probably starving.
I'm very much hungry.
So you have to be starving.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. And like I said, we touched on it briefly. There's a new book coming. We'll definitely have to chat more when it's closer to launch.
In the spring.
Yeah, and I've actually finished it and I can give a proper review, but so far, so good.
Right.
Again, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Exciting.
So good.
Yeah. So the I do have to say, I don't think I addressed this in the interview. The interview would kind of happened last minute. Unfortunately, we couldn't have Chaunce there, but I was stoked to be able to pick Heather's brain for a little while. But Chaunce is going to get revenge on me because
yes. Well, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Exactly. We can't say exactly why, but if it comes to fruition, you will know.
We're very cryptic this episode.
I know. We're living through code. We're going to have to invent our own language. To the Trek propaganda portion of the show, today I actually want to give a shout out to not an article, but a video done by the Trek's managing editor, who I've given many very worthy shout outs to. That's Maggie Slepian. She did a comparison of the very popular Thermarest Neo Air X-Lite with the soon-to-be-released Thermarest Neo Air Uberlite. You probably are not familiar with the Uberlite name unless you're a gear junkie. That's because it's not yet released, like I said. But I think it has the potential to become the new most popular sleeping pad. And that's because it's about 4 ounces lighter than the X-Lite, which is already very popular because of its low weight. The only question on this one is the durability. Admittedly, she's only had the chance to test it for about 6 nights. She brought it through the winds on a backpacking trip, and she has done some overnighters since. I think she's about to get some more testing in this weekend, so if that updates, I will certainly let you know in a future episode. But regardless, you should definitely check out this video where she compares the two sleeping pads. Again, I think this has a chance to be big, but that's a major to be determined. And if you want to see this, go to the Trek's YouTube page, and it will be in the show notes because that's what we do. Okay, to the coolest part of today's show. I shouldn't say that because we had a Nish on earlier.
Yeah, this is the second coolest. Second coolest part of the show.
Yeah. So I know you were very excited for this because some people had given you some insider trading
at
the recent Thru-Hiker meetup.
Yeah, at the last Thru-Hiker meetup, people just started telling me their ideas, and I was like, this is perfect. And I pulled out my phone, and I was like, I'm writing these down.
They told you this in the hopes of it getting on the show, or they knew the context of our segment?
Yeah, but I don't think it was to get on the show. I think it was we were just talking about, like, just different hiking things, mm-hmm. and then they came up, and then they were like, oh, they should be patent pendings. And I was like, I'm already writing it down.
People must like you better because no one gave me any patent pending tips, or they just thought that, you needed a little help in that department.
I guess my costume looked better than yours.
If you didn't listen to whatever episode it was, we had the same costume. Except for
the one that comes out next.
Is that what it is? If you haven't heard the episode that comes out next, is that right?
Yeah. 24.
I think it's 22. The gut hook episode?
Kickstand. We talked about this on Sunday.
Okay. You could be right.
I could also be wrong.
Our timelines are so weird with this. I won't even confuse you with the recording timeline that we've done with this, but we weave a tangled web.
Yeah. Yeah. It was on one of those episodes.
Yeah, one of us is wrong. Yep.
Anywho. Okay, I will start because I've got two and I see you only have one.
Yeah. Although I did get a fan submission because I put a call at the last minute.
That doesn't count as yours. That counts as a fan's.
But what about the people that gave you ideas?
You put a call out. They came to me.
All right, fair. Okay. I guess. Not really.
My first one is gloves with micro spikes. Mm. So when you're hiking and stuff, like if you take a little tumble and it's like not in a condition where you'd have an ice axe or anything to self-arrest with, you could just be like, and put your hands down. And like, all is good.
So do they retract or they're just always out?
No, they're just gloves with micro spikes.
So like when you go to scratch your nose, you're just...
You're getting a really good scratch in.
That area will never scratch again.
The back of the glove.
Back of the glove.
It's with like the back of your hand.
Yeah. How about when you need to use your gut hook app?
Well, if your gloves aren't the kind that can touch iPhones,
you'd take them off anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking out loud here because if we're going to include it in the store, you got to sell me on it.
Okay.
What's the weight on these?
Oh, so light.
So micro light.
So light.
Yeah. All right. Doesn't sound dangerous whatsoever. I mean,
no. There's no way that this could go poorly.
Okay. I like that. Should I go and then you'll do the next one? Because I do have another one, which is totally my idea, not something that I took off of Instagram.
You go, then I'll go, then you'll go.
Okay. This is, as a ginger, I think you'll be able to relate to this. Although, you're not a sun umbrella user.
No.
I don't know how you do it. But one of my biggest gripes with the sun umbrella thing is it's perfect at like high noon when you've got it fixed to your pack and the sun is directly overhead. However, these sun umbrellas are smaller than a normal size umbrella for good reason. One, you don't want the extra weight. And two, it just becomes a sail. Like there just becomes a point where it's too much umbrella. So the issue with this, especially later in the season where the sun is very low, is having it affixed over your head oftentimes doesn't do shit because the sun's coming in from a different angle. Maybe this is just hashtag Sobo problems or the sun's always in your face. But there was a lot of times where if I did have it affixed in my pack, I'd have to like either do crazy rigs to make it point to actually provide shade from the angle that the sun was coming in at, or I just have to hold it. That was probably more often the case, which gets tiring very quickly.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too fun.
It's not.
They should make like a rotating middle part that you could just like...
Well, careful, because my idea is the part where it hinges would be motorized, and then that could be controlled by an app on your phone where you could just control the angle at which it points to adjust based on where the sun is. And
you'd have to charge that though, right? Hey, I can't leave town today. I've got to charge my umbrella.
So because it's a sun umbrella, it would be solar powered.
Okay. I'll give you a pass on that one.
I kind of pulled that out of my butt. But I do think, you could probably also make it that it based on your GPS, it would know where you are and therefore where the sun is.
Okay.
So you wouldn't even have to really control anything at all. It would know.
It's like a sunflower.
That'll
be the name of the sunflower.
The sunflower umbrella.
Okay, perfect. Patented.
Cool. All right. Patent pending. Technically speaking.
Yeah. All right. I just added one because I got an idea when you said yours. A backpack.
This is going to end up being an hour long segment.
That happened last time. A backpack sail. So like when you go through like a really windy part.
Yeah.
You can just like put up this little sail and like catch the wind and it'll like accelerate you.
Mm.
It's like when Mario like, what does he do? And he goes a lot faster.
Eats mushrooms.
Yeah. Or in Mario Kart where he goes through that little rainbow thing, the little diamonds on the road. And then he like gets super speed.
Yeah. Or he ingests a star that can make him go fast too.
That's what I meant.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay. My questions. Let's see. Is that cheating? Is that so yeah. Like
you're... Well, it's like hiking with a dog. The dog's pulling you, isn't it? A
true.
Little bit.
Are
you calling all dog hikers cheaters?
Are dog hikers cheaters? I guess it depends, because I think the amount of times you're wrestling with a dog that's also behind you, like I think at the end of the day, kind of balances itself out. At least if it's anything like my dog, because it likes to go in all directions.
Not balance out that you have to carry the extra weight, so it slows you down all the other times you're not using it?
I mean, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I think if you caught a really windy section, like, Southern California and the PCT, and you just happen to be a lot of wind at your back, you could potentially do a 40-mile day without really much effort.
Someone has to test this.
Would you then also need wheels on the bottom of your shoes? Like, what are those
roller skating?
Wheelies. Is that what they're called?
Imagine through hiking in wheelies.
Yeah. Plus with a sail. Like, you could legitimately...
That'd be a new genre.
You could pull a 40-hour day... 50-hour day. I'm gonna call it a 60-hour day.
A 60-hour day.
That's how fast you're moving at the speed of roller skating, which bends time. So yeah, that's actually exactly what I meant.
All right, I'm sold.
Okay, I think okay. Well, I'll allow it. It's going in the store. The hiking sale. This one come. I mean, this one's from me. But if it, let's just call my alter ego Mia Cheese. My idea again. Trail drones. You get 5 emergency drone drops, so you don't have to get off trail to get something that broke or needs to be replaced. I'm going to round up on my own idea that I just invented and say that this could also include food.
If drones could carry that heavy of weight,
why wouldn't it just carry everything?
Why not just strap my pack to it?
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's part of the whole thing. Maybe drones are the new Sherpas.
How weird would that
Sherpa
be?
Sherpa drone. Yeah.
It gets windy and you see your pack just flying off a cliff.
We need to find a way to make drones produce no noise.
Yes, that would be a big complaint.
They are obnoxious. Because you back in your photography days, your freelance photography days, you used a drone for some of your freelance gigs?
I bring the drone on parts of the Colorado Trail.
Okay. Which one do you have?
The one I bring on trail is the DJI Mavic Air.
It's pretty noisy, yeah?
Not as noisy as like the others. Like I have the Phantom 4, and that one I use for like weddings and stuff. And
gotcha.
It's like a bee's hive is being hit.
Yeah.
The Mavic Air is a lot quieter, but it's still like you can kind of hear it.
Interesting. Have you compared it to the Mavic Pro?
Not in the air, no.
Okay. Because that's the only one that I have any experience using myself, and it was surprisingly loud, especially for how small it is. The thing is like... A two-dimensional football, basically.
If we both have drones, let's have drone wars.
Drone off? Actually, don't have it anymore, but we could.
Fly them at each other as fast as we can.
Yeah, battle drones.
Yes.
Okay. That'll be a maybe on the patent pending store. I'm not sure how crazy I am, but unless we can get the patent pending idea is noise-free drones. Let's just extend
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Just remove the noise. Noise canceling. Put some like those Bose headphone canceling technology into the drone. Solved. Problem solved.
Yeah. Put that soundproofing stuff on all of the wings,
yeah.
The little propellers.
Okay. So that's what's going into the store, is noise-free drones.
Yes.
We're gonna team up with Bose in this one.
Okay.
Sweet.
I accept. Now that I'm looking at this next one for a while, I don't think it's actually that good.
Not as good as noise-free drones?
Well, it's meant to compliment, because this was the same conversation we had it in.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about when I slipped on Fuller Ridge and I didn't have my ice axe and I like slid a while and had to stop myself at that tree.
Mm-hmm.
So these were ideas that they were saying that I should have had at the time.
Okay.
And the second was, since I was in my rain pants, I was sliding faster because those things are like butter on snow.
Right.
So they were saying have like fly trap rain pants where they like just have like a line of like fly trap type stuff on the outside. So they aren't as slippery. But there's a lot of problems that come with that.
Yeah.
Like folding them and putting them back in your pack.
Hmm. Also for glissading purposes, don't you want them to be slippery?
I think you'd want to take them off. That way you don't go like warp speed.
Got you. So this is specifically to prevent you from just eating shit for a long time.
This is like accidental falls. Like you're walking on something that's not like particular dangerous.
I noticed that there's a fall theme happening with your patent pending.
Well, that's where this conversation came from.
Oh, so this is the same person.
No, it was Piers and his friend both like coming up with ideas.
Got you.
Next to me.
Got you. Piers. Fun aside, I think we broke the news to Piers that he probably wasn't bitten by a brown rookless spider. Yeah,
he was so upset.
He was at the most recent Thru Hiker meetup, and I just started to bring up the episode. He goes, yeah, man, I couldn't believe it. Like, legitimately, the doctor told me I was bit by a brown recluse. This shocked my world that apparently I wasn't.
He used to go back and correct all those stories he's told his friends.
Exactly. So kudos to you guys for, I don't know if you broke his heart. You gave him some breaking news.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to add to your idea?
No.
Okay.
That one probably won't make it.
Yeah, I'm going to say, yeah. I'm going to go with
I'm self-vetoing that one.
So I just got this one in my own brain. But again, if it was not my brain, it would be Patrick Walker on Instagram.
Such a cheater.
And he suggested a two-way petting zoo. You pet the animals and they pet you back.
I really like that. I don't know why.
I'm confused by it.
What does that have to do with backpacking?
Yeah, there's a good chance that Patrick has never listened to the show, so he saw me posting in search of ideas, and that his two-way petting zoo was the first thing that came up.
I just picture like you at a zoo and a goat's just like petting you on the head.
So you have to train the animals to pet you, but not too aggressively.
But just gently.
Yeah. Is this going into the store?
Yes.
We're selling tickets to the two-way petting zoo.
Oh, yes.
I think this would be hotter than Westworld.
I think this would be hotter than the Trek.
Oh, well, come on now. Let's not take it too far. Two-way petting zoo. Okay. Does that conclude today's patent pending?
I think so. I think that's the highest we'll get.
If you guys have any patent pending ideas, email it to podcast@thetrek.co. We will be sure to steal it and not give you any credit for it. And that concludes the segment portion. But we do, as always, have 5-star iTunes reviews.
Woohoo! My favorite part. Okay, the first one says, my new favorite podcast, by what, only 48 hours?
So, I should clarify, because I wrote these and didn't do a screenshot. I think it's my new favorite podcast is the title, and then their name is what, only 48 hours. So it's...
Oh, like by
yeah.
What is the first...
A little bit confusing. That's like one of those band names where you don't totally understand, like Panic!
Exclamation point
at the disco.
As an aspiring thru hiker, this podcast is informative and hilarious. I've learned and laughed so much. The only podcast that makes getting up for my morning commute easier. I can't wait to follow Zach's journey when he finally decides to hike the AT.
I should probably do that sometime, huh?
Yeah, get on it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the review. The next one comes in from Long Legs Legato, and the title is Satisfies My Passion for Backpacking. Coming at you from the Arctic, exclamation point. I work in Butthole, Alaska on a tugboat from May to November every year, prime hiking season. This podcast keeps me happy with my never-ending hunger to explore. Planning my first thru hike of the PCT next summer, goodbye Arctic Ocean. Great info and the host work well together. You have a fan above the Arctic Circle. That's got to mean something.
It does mean something. It
means actually a lot of things. How many people do you think live north of the Arctic Circle?
How many people in tugboats do you think are listening to podcasts?
We are huge in the north of the Arctic Circle tugboat community. That's our go-to.
Him and the Eskimo listener are probably together.
It could be the same person. No, they left two separate reviews. So apparently...
No, they're just buddies.
Where people are cold and miserable, our voices are somehow soothing.
Backpacking Radio.
Yeah.
The podcast for those who are cold and miserable.
If you're miserable, this might work better for you.
Boy, do we have something for you.
Yeah. Before I do the normal goodbye spiel, I want to get your take on how you thought episode 24 went, to kind of get the stoke going for now that we've recorded it.
It was very good, I think. Puma came and hung out during the whole thing, which was nice. That's our true. Guest was very good. And like a psycho hiker. Wow, he's fast.
Yeah.
He
kind of reminds me of Legend Jr.
Yeah.
He had heavy Legend vibes to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we established that there's a Legend Senior on that one.
This is true. So I guess he's Legend the third. The third.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The third of his name.
Right. Right. So yeah. 24 was a little bit wild.
Yeah, it was the day after Halloween weekend. Me and Zach both accidentally showed up in our Halloween costumes.
Yeah, which we didn't plan.
No, and then that was also the day Puma recorded like a behind-the-scenes clip of the whole recording. And I'm there your... like in an apron and Zach's wearing America pants.
Leggings, tight, my wife's leggings. That's neither here nor there. If you want to have your review read on the show, you can do so by leaving us a review on iTunes. You could also subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast consumption tool, medium, platform, channel. I don't know what the right word is there. You can get in touch with us at podcast@thetrek.co and follow us on social at Backpacker Radio on Instagram, at Backpacker Pod on Twitter, facebook.com/Backpacker Radio. You can find Chaunce
at Instagram at Juliana_Chauncey, on YouTube at Juliana Chauncey, and on Facebook at Chaunce Hikes.
You can see me doing stories of the animals in my house at ZR Davis on Instagram and also the same on Twitter. You can support the show at patreon.com/backpackerradio. And I think that's all that we've got for the spiel, right?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Okay. Thanks for listening. Happy hiking.
Bye.
But wait, there's more. For longtime listeners of the show, you will recognize the following recording, which is from Stephen Shattuck, a.k.a. Twinkle, who was our guest on episode number 6. Way back in March, Twinkle embarked on a year-long international dirtbagging adventure with his wife, Grace. I asked him to give us an update on his travels thus far. Warning, if you're prone to adventure-induced envy, the following recording may not be suitable for you. Enjoy.
Hey Badger, Chaunce, the Trek Podcast. This is Twinkle checking in. I'm currently in Namche, in the heart of the Himalayas, Everest region. Grace and I have just finished the Three Passes trek. It's a trek we started in Paplu, took flight there, hiked to Namche, and it goes over three passes, all pretty close to Everest, and they range from about 17.5 to close to 19,000 feet in elevation. So huge. Yeah, the highest we've ever been. It was amazing. It took us like 22 days, and it's not very long, but you have to acclimate, which is something that was new for both of us. The first half of the trip, we actually did it counterclockwise, which is not the typical way to do it. Most people do it clockwise because that's the way it's described in the book, the guide that most people use. We did it for many reasons, mostly to avoid the crowds. And we thought the acclimation process would be a bit easier going counterclockwise, as we could do side trips to these pretty hidden valleys. So the first one is Rangila Pass, and we went down to Gokyo, which is like Tokyo, but with a G. And then past the second pass, which is Chola Pass. I think La is pass in Nepalese. So Chola, we did that, and that was a really fun one as well. You get amazing views of Amadablam on the way down, which is an iconic mountain, probably the prettiest mountain I've ever seen. We went to Kalapatar, which is near Everest Base Camp, and that's also real close to 19,000 feet. Gave us spectacular views of Lhotse and Everest and the Khumbu Icefall, which is the famous icefall that climbers of Everest have to go through past base camp, which is quite dangerous and beautiful to see. And then after that, we went over our last pass, which was Kungmala, and down to a town called Chakong, which is at the base of Amadablam. We actually skipped Everest base camp, which is surprising to a lot of people, but the more and more we heard about it, the more it didn't sound very appealing to go to. You don't get views of Everest. It's not climbing season currently. And there's a ton of people going. I think it's a bucket list item for a lot of people, so they come to this region, just climb that one valley, get to Everest Base Camp, and go back. I don't know. Didn't really draw us in as we thought it might in the beginning, so we ended up just skipping it and climbing the mountain Kalapatar next to it instead. It's been about 8 months since we quit our jobs, and this has just been the past month of those 8 months. In the first 2 months, we did the Hayduke route. To this day, that's probably the most rewarding thing we've done yet was the Hayduke Trail. We did a lot of alternatives. I think our first 200 miles, very little coincided with the original Hayduke Trail, but you know, pretty close, and a lot of alternatives from across Utah, if you've heard of that trek. Some alternates that I just put together myself through the Maze District and other places. We ended up rafting about 100 of the 800 miles, which was quite fun. We rafted the Colorado from Moab to Spanish Bottom. And then we also met up with our friends Aaron and Chris and rafted the Escalante for, I can't remember, 35 or 40 miles, something like that. That made the adventure really fun. A ton of beautiful slot canyons and really remote. We went days and days without seeing anybody. And on the entire through hike, we only saw one other group of, I think, two or three through hikers, but it was from afar and we didn't even get to talk to them. So it was the first time I had felt that type of remoteness and grace as well. So from there, we went to Scotland, hiked across Scotland. That was really fun. We did it with two of our friends, Grant and Ian, and hiked coast to coast from Malag to Dunottar Castle. We took a few weeks off and did beaches in Greece and toured some of Italy for 2 weeks, and then went to Lofoten Islands, which, if you remember back when we talked, I think that was the thing I was most excited for going into our year off. And it ended up being the biggest dud because we were there for 2 weeks and got about 10 hours of sunlight in 2 weeks. So from there, we went to the Pyrenees and met up with my sister in Hendaya. Hiked from there to the Mediterranean, a town called Banyuls-sur-Mer. The entire length of the Pyrenees chain on what's called the Hot Route Pyrenees or the Pyrenees High Route. That was really cool. From there, Grace and I went to Chamonix, France, and hiked to Zermatt in Switzerland on a route called the Walker's Hot Route, the Walker's High Route. It's typically a ski route that people do in the winter, but it's become more and more popular the last decade or so with hikers as well. Also very done up and very expensive. Maybe something that would be more fun if we did it in 2 weeks and had a lot of money rather than a year off where we're trying to save money because it was quite expensive. From there, we went to Italy in the Dolomites and did the Alta Via 2, which is about a 120-mile trail. And we kind of did it on a whim. Actually, Grace found it just researching online, and we quick downloaded a PDF guide to it and went and did it the next day. Like, I think we were in Venice and just said, oh, that one looks good, let's go do it, knowing that we wanted to do a hike in the Dolomites. And that ended up being probably our favorite trek in all of Europe. Also, I think the really fun thing that we enjoyed about the Alta Via 2 was it had a lot of Via Ferratas in it. They're very easy Via Ferratas. A lot of people would rope up for them, but it's definitely not necessary. That made it really fun and interesting and, you know, added another element to through hiking that we hadn't had in our previous hikes, which just added a ton of fun. And the Dolomites are just stunningly beautiful. Just really sharp, sharp rocks everywhere, just jutting out of, you know, green rolling hills and fields. And yeah, we just loved that hike a lot. From there, that was like, again, another several months of hiking straight. So we took another week off and did beaches in Croatia, which was really fun, and then went to Morocco, which was just another decision on a whim. A few days before we left, we decided, let's go to Morocco and hike in the Atlas Mountains. I mean, how cool would that be? It's northern Africa, and the biggest mountains in North Africa, Unfortunately, Grace ended up getting really sick, so I did the trek on my own. That was really cool. The Atlas Mountains they rise just to the north of the Sahara Desert, and they feel like desert peaks. They're dry, arid, almost nothing there. It was a pretty crazy trek because it circles the highest mountain, which is Tubkal Peak. And I think it's about 80 miles or so in total. And it summits the mountain, which is, I think, just shy of 14,000 feet high. But the whole time I felt so alone. There was nobody there, no tourists, no foreigners. But there were a lot of these locals trekking back and forth. But it was fun. They were so nice and so welcoming. And I mean, even just walking with a pack and a guy comes by and he's riding on his donkey and he was interested in what I was doing and we were going the same direction. He was going a bit quicker than I was because it was uphill on a mule and just said, "Hey, I'll take your pack," and took my pack and carried it up like 2,000 feet to where he was going. And I just hiked right behind him and he gave it back to me and went on his way. So that, I just thought that was really cool. The people are amazing there. After that, we went to Thailand and spent some time in Thailand, hopping around in the north in the jungle and checking things out. We did some elephant tours, which, Badger, I hear you're doing on your honeymoon. So awesome. And then we came to Nepal and didn't really have a plan, but ended up doing this three passes trek. We debated back and forth on whether we should get a guide or a porter. And in retrospect, I'm very glad we did not. We did it all ourselves, just, you know, in U.S. style backpacking. We've got a lot more in store heading to South America. And actually, we enjoyed the desert southwest of America so much that I think we're going to head back there in the springtime again and maybe do the Across Utah trek, maybe just do several week-long, five-day, three-day backpacking trips. Hiking and exploring in the U.S. is unmatched and unrivaled in any other country we've been in. So it makes you definitely appreciate what we have in the U.S. and the fact that we have this freedom to roam and we have all of this. Anyways, that's about it for my update. Hope you guys are doing well, and I'll be in touch when I'm back in the U.S.
To go. I've never been.